Australia's military history is more than just a collection of dates and the locations of war-ravaged battlefields. It is the stories of service and sacrifice of those who have answered the call of their country of birth or adoption and the enduring legacy they have created. Join me as we look into one of those stories. I'm your host, Ross Manuel, and welcome to I Was Only Doing My Job, Australia's Military History, a Doc Network podcast. Now let's get started. G'day folks and welcome to episode 70 of the podcast recorded on the 11th of May 2024. This is the third episode that has been made in partnership with History Guild. Now under normal circumstances, I would be recommending you check out our website or web store to pick up one of our awesome morale patches, but instead I recommend you check out historyguild.org and check out one of the hundreds of articles dedicated to educating people about Australia's contribution to battles in Greece, Crete, and Malta. And as the day this episode has been released is International Nurses Day, I felt it fitting to give you the life, service, and legacy of a nurse who served in the Greece and Crete campaigns, Matron Kathleen Annie Louise Best. So let's get started. Kathleen Annie Louise Best was born on the 28th of August 1910 in Summerhill, New South Wales. She was the second of five children to Rupert Dudley Best, a commission agent, and Emily Edith Nee Stevenson. She received her education at Bondi Public School and Cleveland Street Intermediate High School, and after graduating, Kathleen commenced her nursing training at the Western Suburbs Hospital in Croydon in November of 1932. Upon completion, she pursued midwifery certification at Sydney's Crown Street Women's Hospital in Surry Hills. Following her graduation, Kathleen joined the staff of Wyong Hospital as a staff nurse. She then advanced to the position of acting matron at the Rachel Foster Hospital for Women and Children in Sydney, where she dedicated 7 years of service. With the outbreak of the Second World War, Kathleen assumed the role of deputy matron at the Masonic Hospital in Ashfield for 6 months. In November 1939, she also joined the Australian Army Nursing Services Reserve List and later joined the Australian Imperial Force on the 30th of May 1940. Deputy Matron Best would be called up for overseas service on the 4th of June 1940 and would be part of a contingent of 56 matrons, sisters and nurses who were called up from New South Wales to serve in the formation of the 2nd 5th Australian General Hospital as it was formed in Greta, New South Wales. Despite her comparatively young age, at 30, Kathleen was appointed as matron, and in doing so, was the youngest matron in the second raising of the Australian Imperial Force. The 2nd 5th Australian General Hospital was a 1,200-bed self-contained hospital, fully equipped with operating theatres, wards, staff quarters, and all ancillary items, together with tents to house them. In September 1940, the hospital was relocated to the Sydney Showgrounds in preparation for its overseas deployment, and the hospital staff now included a team of surgeons, physicians, dentists, 80 nursing sisters, 10 physiotherapists, and selected support staff. This comprehensive team ensured the hospital was well-equipped to provide medical care to the troops it served. Matron Best made an immediate impression on her nurses, whom she referred to as her marvellous girls or her children. She banned them from using lipstick or rouge while on duty while overseas, saying that, quote, "I may be old-fashioned in these matters, but if people think so, I don't mind," unquote. Despite how it sounds, it was actually something that was encouraged and welcomed by a number of experienced nurses who accompanied her, as it had been the practice in the Great War and was, according to the Australian Registered Nurses Association at the time, was also the norm in public hospitals, with nurses forbidden from wearing makeup or jewellery of any kind while on duty. While privately run hospitals tended to be a lot more leaner on this, with many stating, quote, "When a nurse is off duty, it's a different matter," unquote. And as archaic as it sounds, there are still a lot of hospitals to this day that have restrictions on jewelry and makeup, though today it has less to do with deportment and more to do with infection control. On the 29th of October 1940, the 2nd 5th Australian General Hospital embarked upon the renowned ocean liner RMS Queen Mary, which had been repurposed as a troop ship. Nicknamed the Grey Ghost due to her military grey paint job and remarkable speed, the Queen Mary was one of the fastest ships in the ocean for her size, which meant that she could outrun any German raider and routinely did troop transport duties unescorted, as most vessels assigned to her simply couldn't keep up. Departing Sydney Harbour, the Queen Mary joined a convoy containing the converted Cunard White Star Line steamers RMS Mauritania and RMS Aquitania. For Aquitania, this was old hand, as she had served as a troop ship that ferried Australian forces to the Dardanelles during the First World War. These three vessels were three of the six quote-unquote monster troop ships that had large troop capacities but also had the speed to allow them to outrun any German raiders or U-boats in operation in the Indian or Atlantic Oceans. Despite this, this convoy was escorted by the light cruiser HMAS Perth. Upon reaching Bombay, India, the Australian forces transferred to smaller transports. Once unloaded, Queen Mary, Mauritania, and Aquitania turned around to take wounded soldiers and Italian prisoners back to Australia. Now, the downside of the Monsters is that for the most part, those advantages that it had as a troop ship or crossing the Atlantic or Indian Oceans meant that it also disqualified them from being able to transit the Suez Canal. This necessitated Australian forces staying in India for up to a week as appropriate vessels arrived to take them the rest of the journey. This new convoy pulled into Alcantara, the northeasternmost city in Egypt, in November, where they boarded trains for Palestine, setting up on the Gaza Ridge. On the 26th of December, the 2nd 5th was based at Kfar Baloo near Rehovot, primarily for administrative purposes, because at the time they lacked any actual facilities to operate its proper 1,200-bed hospital. In response, many of the staff were then sent on to detachment duties in other parts of the Middle East working in other hospitals. While there, they provided medical services for the 6th Australian Division, dealing primarily with training injuries, illnesses, diseases like dysentery, venereal diseases, and the bane of both the first and second raisings of the Australian Imperial Force, malaria, which, while a tropical affliction, was widespread and rampant in the Mediterranean. During this time, Matron Best left a lasting impression on one of her nurses, who described her as, quote, a young, enthusiastic nurse and a perfectionist, unquote, who ruled with a firm hand but was, quote, always very fair, unquote. Affectionately known as KB by her staff, she was well respected for her dedication and her leadership. By the time the 2nd 5th AGH was fully staffed and functioning, Australian forces had already captured Benghazi on the 7th of February. However, the Western advance of 13 Corps was halted to focus on supporting the Kingdom of Greece in their war against the Kingdom of Italy. In response, Luster Force was raised comprising of the 2nd British Armour Division, the 2nd New Zealand Division, and the 6th and 7th Australian Divisions, along with a Polish Brigade, and on the 5th of March, the first elements of this force sailed from Alexandria to Greece. Unlike infantry units, whose movements were previously recovered in this campaign, the 2nd 5th Australian General Hospital is listed as Corps troops and doesn't have a unit diary of its own. Thankfully, their movements were charted in the official history of Australia's involvement in the Second World War, and I've been able to piece together their activities from interviews conducted by nurses after the war. By the time orders arrived for the 2nd 5th Australian General Hospital to proceed to Alexandria, it was fully equipped and operating in Palestine. However, it wasn't until the 9th of April, or less than a week before German forces would enter the Balkan campaign on the side of Italy, that Matron Best and the rest of the 2nd 5th would depart Egypt, arriving in Greece's chief port of Piraeus on the 12th. From there, they would establish their hospital at Edikali on the outskirts of Athens in a pine forest. This location, once a summer resort for the wealthy, provided an ideal setting for their operations, and almost immediately they began treating the wounded, easing the strain on other British, Australian, and New Zealand hospitals that had already been established. Now, despite the protections afforded them as non-combatants under the Geneva Convention, as displayed by the large Red Cross insignias on all their buildings, Matron Best and her staff operated under near-constant attention from German Luftwaffe units that, according to one of the nurses, quote, flew so low you could see the colour of their eyes, unquote. Now, as you may recall in my previous episodes focusing on William Travis and Ralph Honour, by the 16th of April, the Greek campaign was already a loss for the Allies, as within a week of the Best and her nurses arriving in Greece, the Allies would already be in full retreat. Hindered by poor communications and even worse road and rail infrastructure, the initial plan for the medical services on Greece was similar to the plan implemented for the Gallipoli campaign in the previous war. The most serious wounded would be treated in Greece, while those who could survive the journey would be transported to Alexandria. In theory, this practice would have worked had the bulk of the medical services in Greece not also been evacuating further south ahead of the sudden German onslaught. On the same day, the Captain Travis's 2nd 1st and Captain Honor's 2nd 11th was participating in a fighting withdrawal down the country. Brigadier General DTM Large, Deputy Director of Medical Services British Troops in Greece, issued the order that the 2nd 5th Australian General Hospital was to remain open at its current capacity, if necessary, remaining open to be taken prisoner. Almost immediately, Major General Samuel Roy Burston, Director of Medical Services Australian Imperial Force, insisted the immediate arrangements be made to evacuate all British, Australian, and New Zealand nurses from Greece, either aboard hospital ships or other vessels. With the hospital ship expected to make port on the 19th, Burston ensured that as many nurses as possible would be aboard, even if they had to do so sleeping on the deck of the ship. However, this assurance could not be afforded to the nurses working in and around Athens. As the evacuation was taking place, elements of the 2nd 5th had relocated to Kefisia and were expanding to take over operations of other hospitals, while the nearby 2nd 6th AGH moved into accommodations at Akali. Despite losing most of their equipment in their retreat down the peninsula, first to orders as they'd been told to leave their equipment at Volos until they'd been established, and then to looting, though a lot of it was able to be recovered by Greek authorities, allowing them to start operations. Amidst these tumultuous events, Matron Bess maintained an aura of calmness and courage, which instilled confidence and determination not only in her own nurses, but also everyone she came into contact with. It was under her instructions that the 2nd 5th was able to expand operations to take over patient loads from evacuating field hospitals without any disruptions. On the 18th of April, Lieutenant General Sir Archibald Wavell of Middle Eastern Command arrived in Greece and, after consulting with General Sir Henry Wilson, the Allied commander of Greece, determined that the presence of British and Dominion troops served no further purpose and ordered the evacuation of all Allied troops by all possible means. The following day, the nurses of the 2nd 6th AGH were given 2 hours' notice to leave with orders to join an expected hospital ship arriving at Piraeus. However, due to the short notice, they missed the boat. A second hospital ship, the Arba, arrived in Piraeus the following day, and the evacuation of the 2nd 6th nurses was ordered. Unfortunately, a German air raid on the port coincided with the evacuation, which resulted in only half of the contingent making it aboard, including the matron of the 2nd 6th. The remainder returned to Kephissia. At this point, Matron Best's efforts were split between caring for and evacuating the wounded, and, as now the senior matron in Greece, ensuring that all her nurses safely left the country. On the 21st, the final decision had been made to evacuate all remaining personnel from Greece. While the original date for embarkation was given as the 27th, owing to the large number of Australian and New Zealand forces in Greece at the time and the extreme close proximity to an equally historic date to both countries, namely Anzac Day, which left many thinking that Germany would attempt to encircle the second raising of the Anzac Corps and attempt to destroy it. As a result, the evacuation date was moved forward to commence from the 22nd. Because of the proximity to the 2nd 5th Australian General Hospital to the nearby British 26th General Hospital, a tentative agreement in regard to evacuating both facilities were made. It had been decided that parts of both hospitals would remain operational to look after those men too seriously ill or wounded to be able to be evacuated, but also to attend to the stragglers who had been cut off from their units or had not reached the evacuation beaches in time. The plan was to leave portions of each hospital with the commanding officer, a proportion of medical officers and nurses, and a considerable number of orderlies. The remaining staff would be evacuated. Other senior and key personnel would also be evacuated to save their experience from falling to the Germans. After being informed that over half of her 83 nurses would be left behind, with the potential of them becoming prisoners of war, on the 23rd of April, Matron Best approached Colonel William Kay, commanding officer of the 2nd 5th Australian General Hospital, and acting in her position as senior matron in Greece, expressed her intention to stay alongside her nurses, despite her position giving her a seat on evacuation ships. Matron Best then called for a meeting within the hotel that had been repurposed by the hospital, which caused some concern amongst the nursing staff as they had to go off duty to attend it. She then informed them that half the nurses present would be evacuated from Greece, and the remainder would be required to stay with their patients, and there was the possibility they would become prisoners of war. Matron Best then, quote, told the sisters what was to happen, and also made it clear to them that those who volunteered would stay behind with the hospital and they would in all possibility be captured. I asked them to write on a slip of paper their names and either stay or go, and handed them to me, unquote. She also then informed them that only she would know which nurse decided to which action. Quote, not one sister wrote go on the paper. I then selected 39 sisters to remain, unquote. Matron Best then told the girls, quote, I have a very difficult job to do. Everybody has written stay. Now I have to go and choose half of you to go immediately, unquote. On the 23rd of April, the 44 nurses under the command of Assistant Matron Janet Cook arrived at the Athens train station to head south, only to discover that the rail yards had been destroyed. Taking cover in a nearby cemetery to assess their options, fortunately for them, a convoy of British lorries miraculously arrived and the departing nurses piled aboard with only a small haversack, their helmets and respirators, and headed towards the harbour after dark. Upon reaching the Greek port, they discovered that several ships were on fire, and utilising fishing boats, they were ferried out to the destroyer HMAS Voyager. As warships sit considerably higher in the water than civilian fishing vessels, the embarkation was not going to be easy. To mediate this, cargo netting had been thrown over the side for the evacuees to climb up, but even with that, it was still a precarious manoeuvre, as explained by Sister Bernard of the 2nd 5th AGH. Quote, we had to judge the gap and leap to the destroyer, equipped with a tin hat, respirator and greatcoat and a very tight mid-length skirt, unquote. By all accounts, the crew of Voyager were not expecting women to come aboard, but were excited to see a girl from back home after being at sea for 18 months. Those that remained, according to Sister Una Keist, One of the nurses that stayed with Matron Best, in an interview after the war, that Matron Best had instructed them to remove any dentures and makeup, tie their hair back, and generally make themselves look as unattractive as possible, for fear of what would happen when the Germans came a-calling, highlighting the very real threat of women faced in captivity. They were also instructed to don their red caplets and white veils to clearly denote themselves as non-combatants. This autumn, I Was Only Doing My Job, an Australian military history podcast, has partnered with History Guild to bring you a series of episodes dedicated to telling the life, service, and legacy of four Australians of the tens of thousands who served in the Mediterranean Theatre during the Second World War, playing a vital role in that theatre. History Guild has created this project so more Australians can discover the stories of service and sacrifice of the Australians who fought there and honour them by visiting these battlefields. The History Guild website, historyguild.org, has guides to help people visit and understand the battlefields in Greece, Crete, and Malta. So thanks, History Guild, for the support. And let's get back to the show. On the 24th of April, Colonel K had been ordered to depart Greece and was overseeing the loading of wounded soldiers and the offloading of equipment on the transport Neon Hellas when the port was attacked by German aircraft. The Neon Hellas was bombed and he was mortally wounded, and as a result, he was taken to the British 26th General Hospital for treatment. Matron Best went to see if there was anything that could be done, and it was during this visit that Commander of Australian Forces, General Sir Thomas Blamey, became aware that 40 Australian nurses were staying behind, and, just prior to boarding a plane to fly back to Alexandria, issued the order that all Australian nurses would be evacuated. Sadly, Colonel K would succumb to his wounds on the 26th of April 1941. The same day, Matron Best led the 2nd Nursing Contingent towards Port Peloponnese, where they boarded a merchant vessel to make their escape. To sum up the event, Matron Best stated, quote, "We were all very upset at having to leave the hospital, the officers and the men, and not one of the sisters appeared to consider the personal risk that evacuation at that stage might entail. We took one small suitcase in each a rug, and some nurses thought it pity to leave their stockings, so they pinned them inside the sleeves of their coats. The sisters, as usual, accepted the situation with as much quiet dignity as possible, lying full length on the floor with still helmets on, and even during the worst barrages, there was no panic and no comments," unquote. In total, 165 Australian medical personnel, including 6 doctors, would become prisoners of war when German forces captured the 2nd 5th Australian General Hospital facilities in Greece. All convoys evacuating Greece were harassed by the Luftwaffe and injuries were sustained on the journey. And as the first convoy of troops that departed Greece on Anzac Day 1941 arrived at Suda Bay, it contained a large number of medical personnel from both the 2nd 5th and 2nd 6th Australian General Hospitals. These personnel were then marched a short distance inland and bivouacked in pleasant countryside. Sadly, despite there being a considerable number of medical personnel who landed on Greece, as mentioned in earlier episodes, the personnel could only carry what personal belongings they could carry, and as medical equipment is a lot heavier and bulkier than military hardware, a good portion was left on the docks or in hospitals in Greece or was dumped into the harbour, which meant that they had practically no equipment to care for the 36,000 Allied soldiers that now took refuge on Crete. Fortunately, the 7th British General Hospital and the 189th Field Ambulance had facilities and supplies and gleefully welcomed the sudden influx of personnel to assist. On Crete, the nurses fell under the command of Matron E.C. McKay of the 1st New Zealand General Hospital, and several Australian nurses of the 1st Contingent worked in British and New Zealand facilities, while they worked out of a concrete barn and slept in slit trenches. However, as there was considerably more medical personnel and then facilities and supplies to use them, the decision was made that the 2 Australian General Hospitals would be evacuated back to Alexandria. As a result, the survivors of the 2nd 5th would relocate to the Kilo 89 camp in Palestine in May 1941 to be reconstituted, absorbing the 2nd 3rd General Hospital fresh from England in the process. Matron Best would be sent to a nurse's staging camp in Ghazi in Suez, which was enclosed within high ceilings, barbed wire fences, and only with one access gate. It was affectionately dubbed Katie's Birdcage in her honour, and this camp served as a temporary refuge for nurses who had been separated from their hospital units during the chaotic evacuation process, providing them with a secure environment while they awaited the restoration of documentation and reassignment to the reconstituted general hospitals. The Ghazi camp also served as a holding camp for nurses arriving from Australia, New Zealand, and South Africa to get acclimatized to the desert conditions prevalent in the Middle Eastern theater operations for their assignment to one of the hospitals. In August, Matron Best and 2nd 5th would be relocated to Asmara, Eritrea, in response to concerns about security situation in Palestine. This strategic move allowed the hospitals to continue its operations while mitigating the risk associated with potential evacuations. In Asmara and later in Ethiopia, the 2nd Fifth played a crucial role in providing medical care to British and Indian troops involved in the East African campaign, as well as receiving patients from hospital ships transiting the Suez Canal. In December, the 2nd Fifth was relocated once again back to Palestine, and while there, Matron Kathleen Annie Louise Best would be the first Australian to receive the prestigious Royal Red Cross Medal First Class due to her service in Greece and Crete. The citation read, quote, "Whilst in Greece and throughout the evacuation, Miss Best, by her calm and courageous demeanour, instilled confidence and determination not only in her own AANS personnel, but in everyone with whom she came into contact with. Her untiring efforts contributed largely in the rapid and efficient expansion of the hospital under most unfavourable circumstances. When it became obvious that the evacuation was inevitable, she insisted on remaining with a selected number of her staff to aid in the care of the sick and wounded. Yet despite this disregard for her own personal safety, as senior matron in Greece, she did everything in her power to arrange the evacuation of all other AANS personnel. While finally, when she was ordered to leave together with 39 sisters who had remained with her, her qualities of leadership again became apparent. Exposed to all the dangers of relentless aerial attack, she remained calm and confident, setting an excellent example for her staff. Thus, by her conduct, gallantry, and devotion to duty, she upheld during the most dangerous and troublous period of noble traditions of her service," unquote. Japan's entry into the Second World War in December of 1941 brought about a crucial and urgent situation for Australia. Given that 3/4 of its trained and equipped military force was deployed in North Africa, this strategic placement left Australia vulnerable to Japanese aggression in the Pacific. The surrender of the Australian 8th Division in February 1942 further exacerbated this predicament, highlighting the pressing need for Australia to evaluate its defence strategies and reallocate its forces to effectively respond to the escalating threat. This was highlighted in my episodes on the Banker Island Nurses, Vivian Bullwinkle and Rachel Caisson, episodes 3 and 48 respectively. In response, the 2nd 5th Australian General Hospital travelled down to Port Tafik, Suez, and board the Mauritania to Bombay, India. From there, they boarded smaller transport ships. While at sea, their destination was being argued at the highest levels of government, with the British Prime Minister Winston Churchill wanting, due to the arrival of American forces into the war, to have the Australian 6th and 7th Divisions sent to Burma to defend British colonial possessions in South Asia, while the Australian Prime Minister John Curtin demanded that Australian troops be sent home to defend the homeland. In response to this, Churchill stated, quote, "Mr. Curtin, the fall of the British Empire rests on your shoulders. If you don't do as I tell you, you will be the man responsible for what happens in this event," unquote. Now, it would take the intervention of United States President Franklin D. Roosevelt for Churchill to finally agree. As a result, the 2nd 5th was going to be sent to Java to assist the Australian forces there, but as they were in transit and said the Battle of Coral Sea was taking place on the 4th to 8th of March and the situation in the South Pacific was becoming unclear, the convoy was then rerouted to Fremantle, Western Australia. On return to Australia, and after a period of rest and rehabilitation in which Matron Bess was able to indulge in a favourite pastime of hers, that being cricket, where she regularly played against teams comprising of officers and other ranks, Matron Bess's appointment within the Australian Imperial Force was terminated on the 13th of June to allow her to assume the post of Matron Controller of full-time voluntary aid detachments comprising of Red Cross and St. John Ambulance Brigade volunteers working in military hospitals. This was a precursor to a large-scale expansion of the service. It was in this capacity that Matron Best saw the Voluntary Aid Detachment reorganized as the Australian Army Medical Women's Service. As it became apparent that there needed to be a greater coordination between the Army's three women's services, Matron Best was promoted to Lieutenant Colonel in February 1943 to hold the newly created post of Adjutant General of Women's Services. In September of 1944, it having become clear that the Allies would eventually prevail, she would be released from her position and assigned to the reserved officers list to become the Assistant Director of Women's Re-establishment and Training for the Department of Post-War Reconstruction. Among her responsibilities was the task of assisting servicewomen and female war workers to adjust to civilian life once the war ended, namely when the men came home and resumed their jobs. In 1951, the decision was made to reform the previously disbanded Women's Auxiliary Military Forces as the Women's Australian Army Corps, alongside the Royal Australian Army Nursing Corps as a way of countering the personnel shortages brought on by the Korean War. Not long after reforming the unit and in recognition of the services of the Australian Women's Army Service, King George VI granted the unit royal assent, thereby becoming the Women's Royal Australian Army Corps, affectionately known as RACS. In response and on the advice of the wartime controller of the AWAS, Lieutenant Colonel Sybil Irving, The position of inaugural director of the Corps was offered to Matron Kathleen Best, who was recalled from reserve. For her continued service, on the 17th of September 1952, Matron Best would be promoted to the rank of honorary colonel, and this would be followed up by the appointment of the Order of the British Empire in 1956 in that year's New Year's honours for her continued service in women's military services. Sadly, there would be no happy ending for Matron Colonel Kathleen Annie Louise Best, OBE, as she would pass away from melanomatosis on the 15th of November 1957 at Epworth Hospital, Richmond. She was just 47 years old. Upon hearing of her illness, RAC members commissioned a silver and diamond brooch bearing the insignia of the Corps, and sadly it would be presented on the day of her death, but it would be worn in her honour by every honorary colonel of the RAC until the unit was disbanded in 1989. Following a military funeral at the True RAC Presbyterian Church, with a large number of RAC members in attendance, she was buried in Faulkner Cemetery. She was commemorated initially on the gates of the Women's Royal Australian Army Corps School at Georges Heights, New South Wales, and when the school was closed on the 8th of December 1984, the gates were moved to the Royal Military College Duntroon, where they were rededicated on the 6th of November 1994 in the presence of former RAC members and currently serving female Australian Army personnel. Despite her achievements, Best was described as a modest woman with an engaging sense of humour. Those who served under her considered her an inspiring leader who ruled with a firm hand but also treated her subordinates with fairness. From the papers relating to the rededication of the Memorial Gate, I draw my closing comment. Quote, "From one glance at this wonderful record of service, it will seem quite clearly that Colonel Best has, amongst her many other qualities as a leader, an outstanding ability to build and reconstruct. And there is no doubt that one who has given such invaluable service to her country has earned, in every way, the recognition given her," unquote. And for that, we are eternally grateful. On this, in International Nurses Day, I could think of no one better. And there you have it, folks. That was the life, service, and legacy of Matron Colonel Kathleen Annie Louise Best, who truly exemplifies that age doesn't necessarily mean experience. Sources for this episode are the Australian Dictionary of Biography, the Australian Women's Register, the Great Metropolitan Cemeteries Trust and the Find a Grave website, the online newspaper archive Trove from the National Library of Australia, the Australian Army Museum of Western Australia, the Battle of Australia Association, the nurses by a good friend of the podcast Warwick O'Neill from the Australian Military History Podcast, Chivalry, Stories of the Royal Australian Air Force, and Devotion, Stories of Wartime Nurses, published by the Australian War Memorial, the Oz at War website, the Encyclopedia of Australian Science and Innovation, the Australians at War Film Interview Archive from the University of New South Wales, the Department of Veteran Affairs, the National Archives of Australia, the National Archives of Great Britain, the National Portrait Gallery, the Order of Service for the rededication of the memorial gates dedicated to Matron Kathleen Annie Louise Best, the 2nd and 5th Australian General Hospital Association, the Virtual War Memorial Australia, Monuments Australia, Australia in the War 1939-1945, Official History Series 5 Medical, and the website of the Australian War Memorial. I was only doing my job, and the Australian Military History Podcast is made possible thanks to the generous support from each and every one of you, but especially to the members of our Armoured Emu Brigade community. Now, if you want to continue the conversation or suggest the topic for a future episode, you can do so on all our social media channels. At this point, the podcast is on everything under at IWODMJ. Links to everything are in the show description. If you want to join the Armoured Emu Brigade community, you can also do so on our Discord server. The invite link to that is on the episode description and on the podcast website, www.thedocnetwork.net. There you can find also show notes, transcripts, and photos of my various travels that are locating the myriad of memorials dotted around Australia. If you like what I do here on the podcast and want to directly support the work that I do, you can either buy the podcast a one-off coffee or support us on Patreon for exclusive podcasts, interviews, and giveaways. Each cent raised goes directly into improving the podcast, from digitization of service records and the purchasing of reference material to the distribution and licensing of each and every piece of content. But the best thing you can do is rate this episode on your platform of choice, leave a review, or share it with a friend. It's the easiest way to show your support and get the show into the ears of people who need to hear it. Thanks for listening to I Was Only Doing My Job, an Australian Military History Podcast, a Doc Network production. This episode was recorded on the lands of the Ngunnawal people, whose elders have passed on knowledge for thousands of years, and we pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. This podcast is mostly a one-man show, with me doing the writing, researching, recording, audio engineering, and directing, with additional research done by Laurie Favell of My Silent Hero. All opinions expressed in this episode are solely those of the speaker and do not represent the opinions or views of any agency, entity, or organization. It is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Sharealike 4.0 International License. And until next time, friends, catch you then. Bye.